First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Coming up on episode 410 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Alfa Romeo Stelvio and Acura RDX, Nicole's dead Wagoneer S, Hyundai Ioniq 6N, the new Mazda CX-5, Dodge has a new version of the Charger coming called the Outlaw, Nissan's delaying U.S. EV production and possibly also delaying Leaf production in Japan due to limits on China rare earth exports. Toyota's showing their new supercar at Goodwood Festival of Speed. Subaru's going to be releasing the Uncharted EV later this week. And Cadillac is likely to stick with its long-term EV plan. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 410 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul-Samad from Telemetry.
And I am Nicole Wakeson from AutoWeb.
And I'm Roberto Baldo from SAE International.
And we'll see how this works out, see if there's actually a recording, because we're trying something new this week, trying out Riverside for the first time. And we'll see if it...
We'll see how this goes.
Yeah. One of my bands does a lot of shows in Riverside County, so that's it. That's all I got.
There you go.
I don't think that's the same, Robbie, but I could be wrong.
I know. It seems fine. People seem nice.
I think I've been through Riverside once before.
Everyone's been through Riverside. No one hangs out in Riverside. I had a girlfriend from Riverside.
All right. Let's carry on here. Nicole, what have you been driving?
I have been driving the 2025 Acura RDX SH all-wheel drive A-spec Advance. That's a lot of description for one car.
That is an increasingly common problem across the industry. Too much name.
It's too much name, and that's the official. So, like, if you think about it, so 2025 year
too much name.
Model, then SH all-wheel drive. A-spec is really like a package, so I don't know why they do it that way. You know what I mean? Like, it's not... Anyway, yeah. So I actually have to flip both sides of the Monroney to read the entire
name. So the name wraps around the other side of the Monroney?
It wraps around to the other side. Yeah, it's that much name. It's too much name. So for this year, it's got like light refresh. It's not a major refresh this year. I guess the biggest thing is like the grill changed up a little bit and it looks cool. This is not an inexpensive vehicle. Let's start right at the top. So the
Is there such a thing anymore?
I know there's not. There's not really.
Maybe there will be. We'll see.
Maybe.
What's late.
So the base price on this is $44,700. The top trim, which is what I have, is $54,450. You guys want to take a guess at destination?
Oh, $1,300.
I'm going to say $14,000.
Oh, God. It's $1,350. You both win?
We're both winners.
You both win. You're smack in the middle.
America.
So $1,350, not too crazy. So this one at the top line, I mean, $54,450. It's a lot of car, but you get a lot of features for that. The basics, it has a 2-liter turbo 4-cylinder with a 10-speed automatic. You get 272 horsepower and 280 pound-feet of torque. It's plenty powerful. You know, it drives really, you're going to accelerate on the highway without issue. The only thing I found is there's drive modes, and the drive modes, when you put this one in like a sport drive mode, it isn't pretty in its loudness. It's obnoxious. Like it just sounds, it makes it sound like, you know, when like your transmission isn't shifting right or something, or you should have shifted and you haven't on a manual and it gets a little bit into that annoying like
grinding.
It gets into a little into the annoying. I'm like, oh, I don't like that. And I flipped it back down. This is two rows, very comfortable, plenty of room for everybody. It has sort of very, very sporty front seats, so they hug a little. So if you don't like that hug, if you like a flatter seat back, you're probably going to find these hug a little too much, which, I mean, it's something you can get used to. But if you have a very wide frame, especially if you're a heavier person, you're going to find these are a little too snug, I think. But it is, you know, there's a good amount of room in it. There's 29.5 cubic feet behind the second row. 46 if you fold down the second row. So it's got a good amount of cargo room. For infotainment, It's a 10.2-inch center display screen, which is cool. There's a 10.5-inch head-up display, also cool. What is not cool is something that is actually going away. They have this, they call it the True Touchpad, which is the interface that you use to control it. It's not a touchscreen, and it is set back a little bit. Like the cars that do have screens that you can't touch, they tend to be set back so you don't impulsively reach out to touch them. If you reach out to touch this, it's too far reach, which is sort of like your reminder, like, this is not a touchscreen. It's too far away. The way it works, you know, it is like a little, I don't know, maybe like 2-inch by 3-inch little pad that's a little bit higher up. And it even has a nice little like thing to rest your wrist on so that you can rest your hand there while you're trying to use the touchpad. Because without that, if you're just trying to touch it, every bump you go over, you're hitting the wrong thing. I find it's going away. So I can complain about it all I want. They already know it's not a great idea. They're getting rid of it. But I didn't like it. It was funny. I was in the car with one of my daughter's friends who is almost 25, so a youngin'. And she sat down and wanted to connect her phone because she likes to play her music. And she's like, what? Can I not touch this? What is this? This is weird. And I'm like, okay, if the 25-year-olds don't like your tech, you have made a mistake. Like, and she even said, she's like, this is just not... This touchpad is freaky. It's not intuitive. She didn't like it either. So nixed by me and by a 25-year-old. So clearly no one likes this.
Well, let me step in here. I'm the weirdo that actually kind of likes it.
I hate it.
I like it because it's the same.
Yeah, sorry. Really, Robbie?
I like it. Robbie's dying here.
I'm dying. So I use a Wacom tablet, a little pen. And wherever my pen is on the tablet, that's where my mouse pointer is on my screen.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's absolute positioning rather than relative.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I like the absolute positioning. That I do like that it does that. But I still find it, like, even especially, like, for me as a driver, it is in a good spot to rest my hand there, right? So I can rest my hand on that little pen.
See, I have really long arms. Look, I can reach you all the way and...
Yeah.
Like they just keep going. It's like the beginning of Star Wars. I'm only at my elbow. That's only my elbow. And it just keeps going and going.
Going and going. Well, but it's so, I mean, it's the position of it is good. And I, you know, it functions. I just don't think it's easy. It's just not as, if the road's rough,
most people
don't like
it. That's
it's a little tricky. Like, I think it takes your focus away a little bit.
It's just me and the other weirdo, Sam.
Yeah. But from the passenger side, it's actually more difficult because the passenger is probably reaching across with their right hand to do something. And now they're not getting the benefit of using the little hand rest. So they're really finding it bouncy. Do you know what I mean? Because they don't have the little, because it's awkward. You can't rest your hand there unless you're going to try and do it as a lefty, and nobody can do that unless they are a lefty. So if your passenger's lefties, perfect. If they're righties, not so much.
They're tighties.
Yeah, righty tighty, lefty loosey. I still say that every time I have to turn a faucet off outside. Every time I'm like, righty tighty, lefty loosey.
If something's weird in the car, like I'm reaching under something and then through, and then I get to the point, I'm like, wait, righty tighty. Okay.
Right? Like you have to say it to yourself. Or if I'm changing a tire, I'm like, righty tighty. Because all of a sudden I'll be like turning the lug nuts and I'm like, crap, wait. Righty tighty, lefty. Like I forget in the middle, like I zone out in the process.
Yeah. I think, you know, the fundamental problem with that trackpad is I think almost everybody is used to using trackpads on laptops. Mm-hmm. And all laptop trackpads work basically the same way, where it's like a mouse, where it's relative position. If something is in the upper left hand corner of the screen, you don't necessarily tap the upper left hand corner of the trackpad. Right. You drag your finger across the trackpad to get to that upper left-hand corner. And depending on the size of the trackpad and what you have your settings at, you might have, and how far you have to move, you might have to pick your finger up and drag a couple of times to get to where you want to be. This trackpad, because it was specifically designed for use in a car, they made it absolute position, like Robbie talked about, you know, with the, like a Wacom tablet. It's Wacom or Wacom, whatever.
I think it's Wacom.
Like Wacom.
Yeah.
Wacom.
Anyway, you know, if something's in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, you put your finger down in the upper right-hand corner and the cursor's right there. If it's in the upper left or bottom left, you put your finger wherever on the pad, wherever it is on the screen that you want to touch, you touch that part of the pad. And I think the problem is not so much that it's a bad design, but it's like 99.99% of the population that doesn't use one of these tablets, that's used to that kind of thing, is used to a completely different way of touchpads working. And so it is, as you said, it is unintuitive if you are not used to it. And most people are not used to that.
It's like yeah. Sam, me, and a bunch of graphic designers and animators.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to miss that.
Those are the other people I know who use those. Designers and animators.
So I won't miss it going away. Yeah, because I did not like it. Otherwise, I liked it. I mean, it's a nice enough car to drive. It was fun. Mine is urban gray with a red interior. Ugh. You don't like the red interior?
No, I don't like urban gray. It's boring. Gray.
Well, I like the red. Urban gray is not very exciting.
No, the red's great.
But the red, yeah. But urban gray is like, it's like a battleship.
Yeah,
gray.
It's just really, really boring.
It's not super.
Acura loves that color for some reason.
But a lot of them, like all of a sudden that sort of, that gray, variations of it, depending on the OEM, has become a thing. Like everyone has one, that gray.
It's still boring.
I'm not arguing. I'm saying it's having its moment. Hopefully the moment is almost gone so you won't be bored by car colors anymore. Okay.
That's all I can hope for. Nice red. It's not Mazda nice, but it's nice.
Nothing is Mazda nice. No red is as good as a Mazda red.
But it's pretty good.
So I like it overall.
It's good red. It's just not Mazda.
It's a good. So the A-Spec package just makes it a little fancier. You get like a sports steering wheel and 20-inch alloy wheels. There's a black headliner. So it's a little styling thing, which looks pretty cool. It looks nice. And you get a ton of features on this. Like it's a loaded, you know, it has a panoramic sunroof. It has heated door mirrors. You know, it's got all the fancy things that you would want in a luxury car. Like they say, let's get luxury. Do you really think of Acura as luxury, or do you think of just like what defines luxury?
I think Acura needs to be, and I think they figured it out a few years ago because they were trying to just be luxury, and they really need to be the Audi of Japan. Like performance. Big word performance, little word luxury.
That's what I think. Like I started to say luxury, and I'm like, it's not really though.
The tagline they've been using is precision performance.
Yeah.
So they're leaning into that. That's probably a good thing. Because it's a very nice interior, but it doesn't feel like a luxury interior. Although I do love the red. I got a red interior in my car. I love red interiors. So overall, I like it. In terms of value, I mean, if you're going near the bottom of the lineup with the, you know, it's 45. 54 gets you all the bells and whistles and everything you could want. I think it's a decent value, but I would not get this now. I would hold off until they update that little touchpad, True Touch. What is it? True Touchpad. Because I don't think it.
They came to my house to pick me up, to drive me around, to demo that when it was new, before it
they
was
were
announced.
Really excited. I remember when
they
it was
came
new.
They came and picked me up, and I was like, ooh, this is awesome.
It was a big deal, and I remember trying because to use it on the first drive, and whatever car I was in, I'm like, I'm not, I don't think I like touchpads.
It's my fault.
I want a touchscreen.
I'm sorry, everyone, because I was so excited about it because the tablet, I was like, this is amazing because most touchpads are, you know, you tacky, you drag, and it's just annoying. Yeah. And I'd become so used to that, you know, wherever my finger is, wherever my pen is, that's where the cursor is. And it makes so much sense in my brain. So I got in the car and I was like, boom, perfect. Zero notes. Little thing for my wrist to hold it because I even use a little thing for my.
Robbie was showing us his little wrist rest.
The wrist rest.
I have a wrist rest. It's all gel. I mean, everything was just like, they just broke into my house, looked at my workstation, and said, "Let's just do that."
They made it just for you, but you didn't buy enough of them, so they're changing it.
I don't have Acura money. Come on, I'm a writer.
Have Acura money.
Or
that's the thing. How much money? Do you have Bentley money? Do you have Acura money? Or are you Toyota money? Which are you?
Yeah, I got Toyota money.
You got Toyota money. I think most of us have Toyota money, Robbie. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. You get a Marienda Acura money.
Or you buy used Acura.
Or you buy used Acura. I liked the Integra when they let me drive that thing around for a week. That was a fun little car.
Yeah, the Integra's fun. So those are my thoughts on the 2025 Acura RDX SH all-wheel drive A-Spec Advanced.
I love that SH stands for super handling. Just awesome. Yeah. This is like
which sounds like it's great because it sounds like a 12-year-old did it. This is the super handling.
What
car.
Kind of handling does it have? Well, it's super.
Super.
Well, back in 2007 or 8, when I first got to drive an original first generation RDX. Yeah, you know, that at that point, I think it was like the second model that had the super handling all-wheel drive because they had it on the RL at that point, and then on the RDX. And the first time I got to drive it was on a track there's a little club racing track north of Detroit and I'm completely blanking on the name right now. But we, you know, they had a, you know, a whole, an Acura brand day up there. So they had all of the Acura models there, and we spent the day there driving, driving the various cars on the track. And it was so much fun. You know, it does make a huge difference because it's the same, it's basically the same torque vectoring system. It's the same torque vectoring hardware that they use now also on the Pilot and the Passport, where with a different set of software, a different control strategy, they call it IVTM4. So this is what they use to emulate a locking differential on their off-roady SUVs. And then on the Acuras, they use it to enhance the on-road handling. So it's pretty cool what they can do with just changing the software.
It's, no, they really, they got to take it. They're getting it. They know what they're doing over there. It's Honda, and they love being like solving weird engineering problems.
Yeah. All right, Robbie, did you drive anything this week?
I did not. Sorry, okay. Everybody.
Oh, man.
Well, here's a fun thing, which everyone might be excited about. I'll start driving more regular cars as well. Part of my job at SAE, because it's sort of morphed slightly different, but to help out, I'm doing more regular cars. So you'll hear me talking about gas cars more often in the future. So
nifty,
which is fine. I love gas cars. I just also love breathing. So
gas breathing.
I know.
It's such a hard decision to make.
Breathing. Did I drive the Integra? I did. Okay. I'm trying to remember. Let me tell you how our lives are so weird that we're always so busy. And it, like, we do lots of cool, fun things, but we're so busy that we don't get the time to really appreciate sometimes the cool, fun things. I drove the Acura Integra at Laguna Seca, but I wasn't 100% sure. So I had to look it up in my phone. I do this routinely. I'm like, have I ever been to this town or this city or this country or this place? And then I'll look up the photos because I'll make sure to take at least one photo at an event. And then I'll look it up and be like, oh yeah, there's an Integra at the track. Yeah, I did this. I forgot.
It is a weird life where you lose track of what you've done. You're like, wait, did I drive?
And
I
these are all there. Like once in a lifetime type things.
Mm-hmm.
But you're so busy and you're so thinking about, oh, I have to like make notes about this. Oh, I have to think about the tire spin. I have to think about the torque vectoring. How does that adjust? You know, I think about the brakes. Your brain is so engaged in all these little things that other people don't really think about when they're driving, that you kind of forget about the entire experience.
Yeah, you know, the other day I was out walking one of the dogs and I was chatting with a neighbor. And they asked, you know, so what's your favorite car that you've driven lately? And it's like, my mind was completely blank. I was just trying to remember because we drive so many different things. I'm trying to remember what I've driven lately that I really enjoyed. So,
when I came back from, we were in Montreal last week, and when I came back, they do the, like, what do you do? What are you here? Why are you here? Blah, blah, blah. What do you do for a living? I'm not a journalist. What does that mean? I write about cars. You write about cars.
Oh,
what's the
man.
Best car to buy? And I'm like, shit. And I'm like, well, how
I just
much
tell
money?
Whatever car I own.
Well, so what you know, how much money you have? I'm like, I don't know. Do you know what car, any kind of car? I'm like, okay, then just buy a Toyota because it'll last forever. He's like, okay, you've passed my test.
RAV4. That's the correct answer. The easy answer is RAV4 Honda CRV. Both
right,
of them,
I was
you
just
need
like,
a
Toyota,
hybrid.
To buy a
both
Toyota.
Of them,
or a Honda.
Honda.
CRV, RAV4. Those are the
and
two.
And he happens to have a Toyota. So I was like, yes, okay. I sent the right thing in Border Patrol.
Whenever someone's very much like, I just want a car, I'm a RAV4 CRV.
So they let you back into the country.
They did let me back into the country, yes. No issues. As it appears, they did you as well, Sam. So that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, I do use a green screen, so you have no idea where I actually am.
You could be just in a random park in Montreal. Yeah.
That's a pretty.
But no, they did let me back in.
But no.
Excellent. This is good news.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs. stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right. Well, I drove last week the Alfa Romeo Stelvio, the 2025 Alfa Romeo Stelvio Tributo Italiano all-wheel drive.
Ooh, that sounds very fancy.
Yeah. So
I
yeah,
had for the Tonale Tributo Italiano. So now, oh, we're just throwing the Italian stuff at us.
Well, you know, it is an Italian car, and all Alfa Romeos are built in Italy for the time being. You know, back in the early 20s, when what was then Fiat Chrysler Automobiles was doing a deal with Mazda to get a version of the Miata, the fourth generation Miata. The original plan that Sergio Marchionne had was it was going to be a new Alfa Romeo Spider. It was not going to be a Fiat 124. It was going to be an Alfa Spider. And unfortunately, along the way, they came to the realization that it would not make economic sense to build these cars in both Japan and in Italy. And Marchionne had decreed that, you know, all Alfa Romeos must be built in Italy. It can't be badged as an Alfa if it's not assembled in Italy. And
yeah.
So they made the decision that, okay, we're going to call it a Fiat 124 instead of an Alfa wow. Spider. And so that is how we ended up with the Fiat, the Fiata instead of the, I don't know, the Alfa. That's a tangent. So the Stelvio has been around for a few years now. It's the current Stelvio is reaching the end of its life cycle, and probably in the next year or two, it's supposed to get replaced by a new model based on the Stella Medium platform. So this is based on the same architecture as the wonderful Giulia. The Tributo Italiano is not the Quadrifoglio. So, you know, and the Quadrifoglio looks like is no longer available in North America.
Oh,
which is unfortunate.
Is it gone?
It looks like it, yeah. It's not
fun.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the Quadrifoglio, the Stelvio and the Giulia Quadrifoglios were awesome. You know, they had that 2.9 liter twin turbo V6 with over 500 horsepower. You know, this has a mere 2 liter four cylinder turbo with 280 horsepower, which is not to say that it's a bad engine. It's actually a very good engine. But, you know, once you've driven a Stelvio Quadrifoglio and heard that sound of that twin turbo V6, you know, which was developed in collaboration with the folks in Maranello, they sell cars that have little horsies painted on the fenders. The Quadrifoglio was incredible, but this is not that. So this is a somewhat more mundane version of the Stelvio. Not to say that it's bad, but just in comparison, it is relatively mundane. You know, so it's got plenty of power. Although, you know, having been driving more EVs lately, you know, it's every time I get back into something like this that I used to think, oh, wow, this is awesome. And then I step on the accelerator and have to wait for something to happen.
Right.
You know, it's
I think one of the only vehicles was the new 750P from McLaren, where it just goes when you step on the gas. I'm like, and then I got back and I told the engineers, I'm all, it's like an EV. They're like, okay, cool.
Good, we think.
Good, like an EV in the best ways. Not, you know, I mean, you know, still has the sound of an internal combustion engine.
Oh, that car. I love that car.
Yeah. But anyway, so it's a midsize SUV-ish crossover thing. So it's got very similar styling to the Giulia, but it's basically a tall hatch version of it. And Nicole and I were having a discussion earlier this week about what's an SUV versus what's a car. Based on the preliminary definition I came up with, this would really qualify more as a car than an SUV.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. The interior is lovely, really nice materials. This feels more like a luxury car than the Acura. You get wonderful leathers and metal finishes and various other things in the cabin. It still has the same infotainment system that it launched with back, 2017, 16 maybe, when it first came out, which means it has a relatively modestly sized 8.8 inch screen, which by today's standards is, you know, kind of feels a little tiny, and more so because of the shape of the dashboard, it is a longer, it's wider but not as tall screen. So in terms of the actual area of the screen, even though it's 8.8 inches, it feels smaller than it is. Smaller than most screens, you know, similar dimensions that are taller, narrower but taller, more squarish in shape. The other thing that I noticed, and it's been a couple of years since I drove one of these, but this one, they actually did update the software since it originally came out, and it does have Uconnect 5 in it, Uconnect 5 software, but it doesn't feel like they fully upgraded the compute hardware under it, because it did feel kind of slow and sluggish sometimes. And, you know, there's a touch screen, but there's also a central control knob, so you can control it either way. And it just, compared to a lot of the other recent Stellantis products that I've driven with the same software, it felt a little sluggish in terms of its responses when I went to tap on something or do something with the controller. So, you know, it's probably good that this one is nearing the end of its life cycle. It does have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto support. I did have some issues. There are several USB ports in the car, and in the center console, there's a storage bin under the center armrest, and there's a USB-C and a USB-A port in there. Only the USB-A port supports phone projection. If you plug into the USB-C port, because this doesn't have wireless Android Auto or CarPlay, it's only wired. And if you plug into the USB-C, it charges, but it will not, it doesn't do the data. And so you have to grab a USB-A cable, which fortunately I always have lots of those sitting around the house. But, you know, when I was trying to get it working, I couldn't get it working at first. And so I had to go back and switch cables so I could plug into the other port. The seats are very, very supportive, even more so than the ones in the RDX. So, you know, I fit. You know, and I am not exactly slim, but it was, you know, let's put it this way. If I'm driving aggressively through corners, I'm not sliding around on this seat at all. It's holding me in place. So I was comfortable in the seat, but anybody who's a little thicker than I am might feel a little pinched.
What a polite description.
So, let's see. The Stelvio is fun to drive. It's fairly quick. It's not as quick as as most electric vehicles that are in the same kind of size, class, and segment. But it's definitely fun to drive. The Tributo Italiano version is available in three color options. Which, given that this is, you know, Italian, makes sense that they would be red, white, and green. I had the Alfa Rosso exterior paint, which is the red. It's a very bright red. It's also available in white, which is, they call it Milano white, which is the boring color. And I think actually the best color on this one is the Verde Fangio, which is an awesome green, and looks really, really fantastic. But that's not the one I had. The Tributo Italiano also has standard 21-inch wheels with the five-hole design, similar to what they had on the Quadrifoglios. Most stuff is standard equipment on here. The red paint was $695 option, and then it was the customer preferred package that gives you some of the driver assist features and the anti-theft system, Alpha Connect trial, and the tire service kit. That's $700. The active drive assist didn't really do much on this, you know, in terms of lane centering or anything like that. But, you know, the other stuff, the adaptive cruise control, blind spot monitoring, intelligent speed assist, all that stuff works fine. And of course, you know, since this is a modern Alpha, if you go looking around on the center console or on the dashboard for the start-stop button, you will not find it. The start-stop button is on the steering wheel in the lower left-hand quadrant.
Just as God intended.
Right where you can press it with your left thumb. So if you get into an Alpha, just make sure just look right in front of you. It's right there. You can't miss it. Other than that, it's good. I liked it. It's a little pricey. You know, the Stelvio starts at about $45,000. This one came to a grand total of $59,385. You want to guess at the destination charges? Remember, this is a Stellantis product.
1800.
1695.
Remember, I said it's a Stellantis product. 1995.
Yeah. I almost went higher. I was like, no.
You, generally, if you're trying to guess the destination charge on a Stellantis product, going higher is not is usually
not a
good
bad
strategy.
Call.
Yeah. All right. So that's the Stelvio Tributo Italiano.
Nice.
All right. Let's move on to let's go back to Nicole.
Nicole, what did you do?
I had an interesting week, guys.
What happened to your car?
So okay. So here's the fun fact, and I
and
went
remind
out
us
the car
what you what...
I have a brand spanking new Jeep Wagoneer S with all of 2,000 miles, not even quite 2,000 miles on it. It is very new and very not driven very much yet. So I went out to my car, and I was get into my car, and I'm like, look, wait, this is very dark. Don't lights come on when I open that door? Maybe I'm not remembering. And no, I am remembering just right. It is completely dead in my garage. No power whatsoever. It is fully charged. It just won't turn on. And I'm like, okay, this is great. So I call the dealership. And the dealership, apparently you call the roadside assistance number and they deploy a random dude to come to your house and get your car. The first thing the dealer tells me, because this is one of those, like, this can't be how this works. He says, it's in your garage. And I said, yeah. He's like, well, you may need to push that out. Like, I'm sorry. It's like a 6,000-pound vehicle or something. You want me to just push it out? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, why can't the tow truck ever? Well, they might not be willing to take it out of the garage. And I'm like, what if I was like a 90-year-old lady? You're going to tell her to push her car out of her garage? I was, okay, fine. So the guy arrives. And the other thing the dealership says to me is, I have no power. How do we get it in neutral? I know there's a latch somewhere to put your car into neutral. And he's like, yeah, I don't know where it is because your car is really new, but I got a tech who does. So when your tow guy gets there, if he doesn't know, call us and we'll walk him through how to do it. Okay, fair. So the tow guy gets there. He's like, I've towed a lot of EVs. Let me look. And he's like looking. He's like, no, I've exhausted all the spots where I would think this would be. He's like, I've been doing this 8 years. I don't know where the heck Jeep hid this, right? So I call them back and they're like, we don't really know. I'm like, you don't really, is there anybody there? Do you have like, I don't know, like a special manual? Like you're actually Jeep. Can you tell me how to get your car in neutral? Nope, nobody can tell me. So then the driver's like, that's okay. I have these little things they wedge under the wheels. And it's like the reverse of like traction, that like traction boards that you put under to get out of the sand. This you shove under the wheels and it's sort of just like, let your car slide out of the garage. So he puts them under the wheels and puts a tow strap to it and drags it far enough out of the garage that he can get it up onto the lift. But then the other thing they had said before we did that was it's probably your 12-volt battery. And I thought, let's hope, because I don't want it to be something more than the 12-volt battery, which still shouldn't be dead. And he said, you should jump that. And I said, little help here. Where would that be? Like, where do you guys tuck this in the car? And his first reaction was under the hood. I'm like, no, this is an EV. Remember, there's no engine. Are you sure? And he's like, oh, no, wait, hold on a second. Puts me on hold. Tow truck driver still laughing. Like, we'll figure this out, right? And he said, it's in the left rear quarter panel. So just open the tailgate. And I was like, again,
dun, dun, dun.
How? Because the tailgate is shut and the car has no power. He said, well, just use the key fob. I said, that doesn't work. The car has no power. It won't open. It's like, well, did you try it? And I'm like, and the tow truck driver's laughing, like, oh my gosh. Click, click, try to open it. No, doesn't open. I said, even the tow truck driver's tried it. It's not me. It won't open. He's like, oh. I'm like, so there has to be a release, right? And so he's like, no. He's like, you probably should just drag it out of the garage and get it to us here. And I think the way they probably did it is they probably, like, if you flip the rear seats down and, like, crawl into the back, and then you can do the emergency release as if you had. But again, let's hope you can jump over the rear seats, even if you put them down, and crawl into the back. Like, I'm trying to think like an old lady or something doing. I'm like, this is not ideal. So they get it to the garage, and my tow truck driver was awesome. Best tow truck driver ever. He was even, as he was hooking the little tow strap, he's like, oh, there's some challenges here. He's like, I hate it when they do this. And he's showing me just tow truck driver point of view, where they put plastic under a car, and he's like, I need to tow, but I don't want to get the plastic, but I need to get here. It was kind of fun to watch. So anyway, they get it to the garage. They check it out, and they say, yep, it's a 12-volt battery. We put a new one in. All the error codes just said 12-volt battery is not sufficient, but we want to put that in, keep it overnight, make sure nothing kicks out overnight, and then we'll get it back to you. And I'm like, okay. And I said, so why? Like, the 12-volt battery shouldn't have died. Like, I get that that was what was causing my car not to start, but why? They're like, So we don't know. So I currently have a car that works. It runs just fine. It has a brand spanking new 12-volt battery in it, but we have no idea. And he's like, no, there's nothing coming up. There's no parasitic loss. There's nothing happening. We can't find anything. And I'm thinking, I think there was. I think something, because it should not have happened. The correct answer is we can't find the parasitic loss. I don't know what. I don't know what happened, or some software thing screwed up or whatever. But yeah, so it works. There's no recall or, you know, notice of this happening with Wagoneer S's. But yeah, so it was a fun day for me on Thursday as I was going back and forth with that. Yeah. So I still don't know. And I was looking, and I don't know if you looked at the document, Sam. I'm still trying to find out. Did you find it? I'm trying to find the release to put the car in neutral if you can't turn the power on. And I found some, like, what is it, like 26-page official Mopar document about, like, how the fire department would disconnect your battery if your car was on fire or whatever. I'm like, and nowhere in there, how to tow it, put it in neutral. Fabulous. How? And nowhere could I find. So I'm like ready to call you. I'm like, dudes, can you just share the secret? I feel like I might need this in the future. Can you just tell me? I can stick a little note in there or something.
I think we'll have to send a note to one of our friends at Stellantis.
Yes, I can definitely ask them, and somebody would tell me.
Do you know Dale Jewett? He's probably the best guy.
I think so. Look, I probably have it. Send me
his
email.
I can send him a note if you want. I'll send him a note tomorrow and ask him, and then we will let you all know next week.
Because I couldn't find it, and the tow truck driver couldn't find it, and apparently exactly one guy. Because I asked when I went to pick it up. I said, how did you get, like, where is the neutral in it? And he's like, oh, Bernie knows, but Bernie's was on a phone call. So Bernie couldn't tell me. Bernie was very nice. No criticism of Bernie. He just happened to be on the phone. And so I still don't know. It's a mystery. It's a mystery, people. So that was my fun time with a Jeep Wagoneer S this week. That took up my Thursday.
And problems with the 12-volt batteries are not, unfortunately, not that uncommon on a bunch of EVs. Not all of them, but on some of them. And you might be wondering, why is there even a 12-volt battery in this car? Because most of all the electronics and, you know, a lot of the accessory systems, things like your lights and your instrument cluster and, you know, power seats and all that stuff is designed to run on 12 volts. So it's all low voltage system. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is, you know, you use a 12-volt battery. You put a 12-volt battery in the car in addition to the high-voltage battery that actually makes it go. And there's a DC to DC converter somewhere that steps that down from 400, 600, 800 volts, whatever's in your EV battery, down to 12 volts to keep that one charged the way your alternator would, doing the same thing your alternator would do on a combustion engine. Mm-hmm. And some manufacturers have had some issues with this. Actually, a surprising number of them have. Ford's got a recall going right now on the Mach-E for 12-volt battery issues. Hyundai Kia had an issue with it. In fact, that was why my car was sold back. It was because the original owner was frustrated waiting for that to be fixed. Kia and Hyundai have since come up with an updated version of their integrated charge control unit that handles the charging of the 12-volt battery, among other things. And it shouldn't be a problem going forward. Mm-hmm. But, and I think a couple of years ago, we had a listener email that somebody with an Ioniq 5 that had written in, they were having problems with the 12-volt battery. Have you had any issues with either the Ioniq 5 or with the Kona before, Robbie?
No, the only time that the Kona, the battery dies, that there was an extra little pad, like a little carpet, like a little rug in the trunk of the Kona that you would put down to protect it, like just like a seat, like a floor mat. And it would slide sometimes. And so once the trunk didn't close all the way, And then we went out to start the car, and it wouldn't start.
Oh, because like left the interior light on and drained the battery?
Yeah,
it
drained
the battery.
That's user error, though, isn't it?
That that was totally user error. Not, but I have like a little box that I take out and jump starts everything, so it's easy peasy.
Yeah. If your 12-volt battery dies in your EV, that's the what happens is then the computers that manage everything can't start up and then start the rest of your car, because that's how it works. Is, you know, the 12-volt doesn't have to crank an engine anymore, but it still has to power the computers.
Yep.
And so if it goes dead, then you've got to, you know, everything else doesn't work.
I had a giant paperweight in my garage for a little while there.
Yep. Three tons of paperweight.
But now it's happy. Now it's all good. It's happy. And, you know, let's hope it continues to. If it happens again, then I'm going to really be concerned. I guess this could be a fluke, right? Just tell me it's a fluke. It's not going to happen again. But it does concern me because there was no reason. Like, it wasn't, if they had said, oh, this was a thing, this caused it, we're going to replace the battery and we fix this issue, I would have felt a lot better, actually.
Out of curiosity, how long had it been since you drove it? How long was it sitting?
It had been sitting for not that long, because I had just put it in the garage, maybe 3 days.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because if it was
long.
A couple of weeks, you know, or more, you know, then that might be one thing. But yeah, if it's only a couple of days, then that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, it was like maybe 3 days, maybe four. I can't remember exactly. Yeah, because I had driven it for some reason. So yeah, so that was not it. It wasn't that it had been sitting for a while, you know. Uh-huh. So because then that would have been sort of a reason, but still, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. So some other EV related news this week. It's the Goodwood Festival of Speed this weekend in England, and it was bunch of stuff that was shown off for the first time, including the Hyundai Ioniq 6N was shown publicly for the first time at Goodwood.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
And so, you know, if you like the idea of the Ioniq 5N, but you prefer a sedan to a hatchback, Hyundai's got you covered now, because now there's a 6N.
Oh, yeah.
Robbie's excited.
And I'm looking at the press release. It says, the model embodies Hyundai N's core principles, corner rascal, racetrack capability, and everyday sports car.
Wait, corner rascal? That's the same person who came up with super handling?
Could be corner rascal. Could be, yeah. The 5N is a blast to drive. So I'm sure that this will be equally fun. 0-60.
I'm going to check my spam folder every single day going forward, so when I get that 5N invite at Laguna Seca,
this time, even if I have for the 5N drive at Laguna Seca, I had already committed to something else that week, and so I had to decline. But this time, I will definitely go. I don't care what I have to cancel. I will go.
Everybody else falls behind.
I'm angry at myself. I haven't even called in the 5N. I could get one in. I'm just like, no, I demand. This is my own fault. I have to wallow in my stupidity.
Yeah, so the 6N has a big wing hanging off the trunk lid. It's one of the colors it'll be available in is that robin's egg blue that they have. You know, that's kind of the signature color for Hyundai's N brand. 640 horsepower. Basically, you can't go wrong with this car. It's got the simulated shifting. All the sounds and everything.
Does it have the N grin button?
It has the N grin button.
Then all is right with the world.
0 to 100 kilometers an hour, 62 miles an hour in 3.2 seconds. It's quick. And then of course, you know, you can just put it into the standard mode, you know, and just drive around serenely in a nice quiet EV. But then, you know, when you feel like you wanna, you know, get your neighbors riled up, you can put it into N-grin mode.
Neighbors riled up. I like that description. Rile up the neighbors.
Yeah. All right. So that should be, does it say when it's coming here? I think it's going to be here by the end of the year.
It's not that long. It's July.
Yeah. Sometime in the second half of the year.
We can make it that long. We can do it.
Yeah. So that is the Ioniq 6N. And then, Let's stick with EVs for, well, let's stick with Goodwood. Let's get one more piece of news from Goodwood. And that is Toyota's new GT sports car. We don't actually know if it's going to be a Toyota or a Lexus. Back in 2022, showed off a concept at the Tokyo Auto Salon called the GR GT3 concept, which is this long hood sports car, you know, kind of a next generation Lexus LFA. Again, we don't know. There's speculation that it might be called the Lexus LFR. So no, it's not going to have, we know it's not going to have the V10 from the LFA. It's probably going to be a V8. This is going to, part of the reason why Toyota is building this is to have a replacement for the RCF GT3 car that they run in endurance racing, and sports car racing. That car is getting old. The RC is going away in its current form, and this is going to replace it. And Toyota had two prototypes at Goodwood, one prototype of the road car wrapped in camo, and then a prototype of the GT3 race car. And they ran both of those up the hill at Goodwood this weekend. What do you think of this thing?
I mean, it looks cool, I think.
You sound so questioning. I think it's cool. I'm not sure it's cool. Is that where you are?
It's difficult to see the sort of contours and the little lines. That's the whole point of camouflage. Yeah. So,
that's the whole point of camouflage.
That's his jam.
I've been wondering all this time.
Yeah. So,
I think it looks pretty good.
Yeah. We'll see how, when it comes out and you can drive it and can you see out the front and what's under
the hood. The camo does hide a lot, but I think even with the camo, it does look pretty slick.
It'll probably be a Lexus, though.
It's most likely.
It has Lexus.
Although, you know,
it could even have Lexus vibes.
It could replace the Supra. Supra's going away, too, so.
Oh, yeah.
They could badge it as a Supra.
That's a good point. It could. It could be Supra.
But it is more likely to be a Lexus.
Yeah. Well, I have a BMW engine in it and BMW shifter and BMW.
You know, like Lexus has a pretty nice V8 that they have in the LC500.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah, you could certainly use that. And, you know, it's in the RCF now and other, you know, a couple of other models. So, you know, they have a pretty strong V8 that they could use. So we'll see.
We'll see what happens.
Hopefully in the next few months we'll have more details, because this, you know, the race car is supposed to launch, you know, for the 2026 season. So at some point between now and the end of the year, they will have to announce all those details. Most likely we will hear the details at the Tokyo Motor Show or the Japan Mobility Show in October. That would seem like the logical place to introduce this. And then it'll probably debut in the 24 Hours of Daytona in January and then run at Le Mans next year.
That'll be cool. Be fun to see.
Le Mans.
All right. Mazda has a new CX-5 coming. They revealed it a couple of days ago, and it looks like a CX-5.
Shocker.
Good job.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to do what you're good at.
Yeah. You know, it's very much an evolutionary design, which is nothing wrong with that. Right now, it's going to be available with two powertrains, the same 2.5-liter Skyactiv-G that Mazda uses in a bunch of their products today, including the CX-5, 187 horsepower, and a 6-speed automatic. And then there will be a hybrid version coming next year with, unlike the CX-50, which uses a Toyota hybrid powertrain, the CX-5 is going to use a Mazda-designed hybrid system. They haven't revealed any details about it, other than it's coming next year. It's a little bit bigger than the current CX-5. It's about 4.5 inches longer, I think, than the current CX-5. What do you think? It's 4.5 inches. What do you think, Nicole?
I think I'm pleased with it. I think it looks good. I'm happy.
I love that the top image on their press page is a teeny tiny picture of the car up a driveway. I'm like, what is happening? Why is this car so far off?
It's so tiny.
It's like, hey, we have a new CX-5. Where is it? It's up this long hallway next to a Lego house.
Like, you feel like you want to crop that by like we need to crop that down.
Let's crop that down, guys.
Yeah, let's crop that down so we can actually see the car. But I think it looks good. It's red in the press photo. That makes me happy.
It is soul crystal red.
So crystal red which I think is cool.
But I think the thing that'll really make you happy, Nicole, is the interior.
Okay, can I read what it says?
Yes.
The all-new CX-5 features a new available 15.6-inch integrated touchscreen display. The largest ever offered. What? Who cares if it's the largest ever offered? 15.6-inch integrated touchscreen. A touchscreen. Just a touchscreen. Thank you, Mazda. I cannot wait to drive this now. I am so excited. Like, get rid of that stupid rotary controller. I know you like it, Sam. I know you like it, Robbie. You're both weirdos. I hate the darn thing. I am so excited. Mazda, listen.
I don't know
to
if
me.
I like it. I just like
you don't
it.
Like
the
it?
Fact that I just like how much you hate it.
I hate
That's
it.
That's what I like.
It's.
I'll have to find something new to hate. Actually, I have my thing to hate. I hate vents that you have to move in an infotainment screen. That'll take its place.
I think about that all the time because, you know, it's the Bay Area is a weird place. Like, it's 80 like at 2 o'clock, and then at 4 o'clock, it's 50 degrees. Mm-hmm. But I was like, every time I move the vents, which is apparently all the time because I think about it now, all about the fact that people don't have it.
Right.
I'm like, why? And I understand money, blah, blah, blah. It's all about money. But yeah.
I mean, you think what you initially think, you're like, not, I don't use them that much, but you do. You use them all the dang time.
Software controlled vents are not cheaper than manual vents because you have to have motors and wiring and stuff in there inside the dashboard, and you've got to have software to control it. And, you know, software has bugs and does silly things sometimes. And it's functionally worse to use.
It's worse. It's bad scene. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're thinking
bad
about
juju.
Doing, as the folks from Polestar referred to them, digital vents, just don't.
Stop.
Just don't do it. It's not worth
Stop
it.
Stop and think about what you're doing.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants it. Nobody.
Stop it. It's like everything has to have AI, and now everything's broke. Stop. Just don't put the AI in your thing. And let us just use the thing because it worked. Stop it.
And unfortunately, on the CX-5, it has manual vents, as they were intended to be.
Yay, go Mazda. Go Mazda. I'm very happy about this.
One interesting detail change. I mean, you know, the design language, you know, is very much evolutionary, you know, from the current generation and the CX-90, CX-70. But on the tailgate and on the steering wheel, they no longer have the Mazda wing logo. It now actually spells out the word Mazda on the airbag module and on the tailgate.
Does it have the Mazda? It still has it on the front though, right?
It has the badge on the front, but not on the steering wheel or on the tailgate, which is an unusual change. The other thing is the name. You know, all of the recent utility vehicles that have come from Mazda have switched to CX and something zero name, like CX-30, CX-50, CX-70, CX-90.
Yeah.
This is still CX-5. And I asked Mazda about this, and they said, well, the CX-5 has been our best-selling vehicle for a decade, more than a decade, and it has so much brand recognition. You know, and they sold, how much was it, 4.5 million? 4.5 million CX-5s globally, 1.6 million in the U.S. That name has so much recognition that they decided to keep it, even though it's now inconsistent with all the rest of the crossovers and utilities in the Mazda lineup.
You got to keep.
I guess
the
there's a certain amount of logic to that. If that's what everybody knows, you know,
just like Hemi.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? Everyone knows this. Let's just do that again.
All right. And speaking of Hemis, the Dodge Charger, is strong likelihood that it will get a Hemi back again. You know, it's definitely getting the Hurricane six-cylinder in the next couple of months. But now that they've brought the Hemi back to the Ram pickups, it seems like a good possibility that we will see one in the Charger again before long. And Dodge has gotten a couple of new trademarks for the Charger, including Outlaw. So they've got the
Outlaw
Charger Outlaw potentially coming in the near future.
Man. I mean, it's on brand, so go for it.
Yeah. It's totally consistent.
It is definitely on brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very divorced dad, but sure.
It's very divorced dad.
Got some strong divorce
dad or midlife
dad
crisis
energy.
Too, right?
Yeah.
You know, 45-year-old middle-aged man, but I'm an outlaw.
I'm an outlaw.
Yeah. I mean,
who wants to go to Applebee's? I'm eating good in the neighborhood.
The Autoblog story says it could be tied to the high-output Hurricane six-cylinder, but I wouldn't be surprised if they reserve Outlaw for the Hemi.
I'm still now picturing every a guy driving an Outlaw. And yes, also would need, I feel like he would need a cowboy hat then, Roberto. A cowboy hat and a bright orange.
No, they just wear a backwards baseball cap.
Oh, backwards baseball cap. In a go-mango orange
wrap around Oakley's backwards baseball cap.
At Applebee's. Eating good in the neighborhood.
And when they stop, they put the car in park, and then they rev the engine.
Ooh, I wonder if they will combine the Fratsonic exhaust with the six-cylinder to make it sound more like a Hemi. So even if you don't get a Hemi, it can still sound like a Hemi.
You can have an imitation Hemi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hemi light.
It can't be the same. They couldn't make it the same. It just would never.
You can program it to sound whatever you want.
I guess you could.
Yeah, that's a thing.
But that would be unfair for the people who really got the Hemi. I feel if I have that, I want mine to sound like mine's better, dang it.
They can make other engines pretty much sound almost exactly like a Hemi. Again, engine sounds are tuned. It's not like it's just some natural occurrence that happens.
It's been a long time since we had natural engine sounds in any car.
Yeah.
In anything, yeah. I know.
In anything. Everything's like, well, we need a little bit more bass. Can you adjust the tubing up. For the blah, 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 blah. It's just like tuning a guitar. You just, adjust this, turn this, it's a lot of little mechanical things. Probably some electronic things that open and close some valves. And then boom, you got a Hemi coming out. Hemi sound coming out of your 86 Honda Civic.
Well, I kind of would want to see that. I like that idea.
Hey, it's been done. All right. Nissan, still having some issues. As they have been for a while, unfortunately.
Nissan.
Yeah, poor Nissan. So they were planning on building a couple of new EVs at their Canton, Mississippi plant. That was originally scheduled to start late 2026, and then was pushed back into 2027. Now looks like it won't be until 2028, the end of 2028, or maybe even early 2029. And guess who is responsible for that?
Ooh, tell us, Sam.
The current administration in Washington and the Congress that killed all of the EV tax credits and all the other incentives. Yeah.
What?
Which I recently learned they did in Canada, too, by the way. Canada, Quebec apparently is like the Canada of, is the California of Canada. Canada. Sorry, because they have the best EV incentives in the country. It was like $12,000. They had 5,000 from the province. Saying it right, I guess, from the province, and $7,000 from the federal government. The federal government nixed theirs at the beginning of this year. Like it's already gone. And now it's just $4,000 in Quebec. So they too have had their EV incentives.
I think Colorado has better incentives than California.
Do they really? I don't know. Colorado. I always think it's just a $5,000. What's California's? Doesn't California have a lot of different kinds, though? Like, aren't there a lot of like income based?
Like, some of them are based on, like, you're updating. If you get a charger put on your house, there's a thing. If you get solar, if you get a battery pack, it's a lot of, they sort of spread it out over a bunch of things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always see TFL like, hey, we just got this, this EV for $3 a month because of all of Colorado's.
$3.72 and we have an EV. Yeah, didn't Tommy get some crazy Fiat deal at one point, I think?
Actually, three of the folks from TFL got Fiat 500Es for basically nothing a month.
So you're just paying for insurance.
So you're just driving a free car.
Yeah.
As long as you're okay driving a Fiat 500E.
Yep. I like the Fiat 500E. It's for the cup holder.
Cup holder is absolutely atrocious. High five from afar, Robbie. Yes. The cup holder.
It's absolutely atrocious.
Thing. What a weird design.
It's just like, and you're looking at the center console, and you're like, you could have just put it right there.
Anyone who hasn't heard us rant about it, what it is it flips out from the front of the center console where it meets the floor. But you put your drink in, you're like, cool, 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 weird spot, but it works. But then when you pick it up, it wants to close. Like it sort of comes up.
And then you're going to break the cup holder is essentially what's going to happen.
Or you're going to squeeze the top of your large, big gulp drink too hard, and you're going to pop the lid off, and now you've got it.
Yeah.
Not a fan of the cup holder. For those who don't know what we're talking about, that's
absolutely
what we're talking
atrocious
about.
Cup holder from a fun little car that's about $7,000 too much.
for however long it remains.
Yeah. Another problem that Nissan's having is in Japan, where they were supposed to be launching production of the second generation Leaf fairly soon. I guess technically third generation, maybe, whatever. The new Leaf pretty soon. And evidently that is being delayed because they can't get rare earth metals out of, they can't get enough rare earth metals out of China because China is restricting exports of those materials in retaliation against, guess who? Yes, the United States for our tariffs on Chinese goods. So, you know, China is basically retaliating against everybody because of what our government is doing. So Nissan is having to delay some of the production of the new Leaf because they can't get some of the parts that they need.
This is a really short story. Does it say in here, scaling back plans for its new Leaf, revised, which is set to launch this year? It doesn't say how far. Does it? Is there something in here I'm missing that says
it doesn't?
Like,
it doesn't give any details, unfortunately.
It doesn't give a time frame. Okay. Yeah. Just scaling back the plan. Okay.
Hopefully we'll know more soon, but right now we don't know anything.
Got it. That's unfortunate.
And then another Japanese-built SUV is going to be getting its global debut this coming week in New York. I'll be there. I think you're going to be there too, right, Nicole?
No, I'm not going to that one. I'm going to be in. I'm going to be looking at something else in Detroit.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Well, you're coming to Detroit. I'm flying to New York.
Well, just because that makes sense. We should have flip-flopped. You could have just driven to one. I could have just driven to one.
So anyway, yeah. So I will be in New York on Thursday for the global debut of the Subaru Uncharted. Subaru released a little teaser image that, like that image of the CX-5. Basically, you see just a tiny little bit of the car.
But that's
driving
a teaser
across the field.
Image.
Yeah.
That's not like the other.
Yeah. I mean, see, at least this is a teaser. It's intended to fool, like, not reveal it. Whereas the Mazda's like, here's the whole vehicle. You're like, I can't see that.
Okay. Zoom and enhance. Zoom and enhance.
Yeah. Right?
So Mazda has been, or Mazda, Subaru has been doing its EV development in partnership with Toyota, which owns a chunk of Subaru now. And from the image that they've released, it looks, this car looks vaguely familiar, like something we've seen recently from Toyota. Because, you know, back in April at the New York Auto Show, Subaru revealed the updated Solterra and then also the Trail Seeker.
Toyota.
Which is a wagon version of the Solterra. And then the following month, Toyota showed the updated BZ and the BZ Woodland, which is just a Toyota-badged version of the Trail Seeker. And they also showed the new CHR, which is electric. And this looks very much like a CHR. So looks like Subaru's going to get a crossover coupe electric thing.
Crossover coupe electric thing. I want that to be the description on the top of my Monroney.
The Uncharted.
Toyota crossover coupe electric thing.
But if I recall correctly, I think the CHR is like 335 horsepower. So pretty impressive performance. So should actually be kind of fun to drive. So
yeah, it should be. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah,
how many dogs can I fit in it?
You could probably fit both of your dogs in there.
Yeah. All right, then. Seems like very Subaru-ish.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be curious to talk to the Subaru folks on Thursday and find out, you know, how, if at all, their plans are changing given the tariffs on imports of Japanese cars and the loss of tax credits, and see what's going to, you know.
Get your cars and your Nintendo Switches now, is all I have to say.
Don't
any car. Get all your cars as quickly as possible, especially if they come from Japan. Because,
and then in The Verge, Andy Hawkins had a story titled "The Great EV Pullback Has Begun." Yeah, you know, and basically it delves into some of the plans that some manufacturers have with the loss of incentives here in the U.S. on EVs, Some manufacturers have talked about what they're doing. Ferrari has pushed back plans for a second EV that they were going to launch. No word on when that's going to happen. They're still planning to launch the first one, I think, next year, if I'm not mistaken. But the second one is now sometime maybe in the future. Ford, we already know, last year they canceled their three-row electric SUV. They've got stuff coming starting late next year from their Skunk Works project in California.
Well,
you know, when I talked with Lisa Drake, and from what I've heard from other sources, you know, they're going to be launching production of the midsize electric pickup around the end of next year. And those are going to use the batteries from the Marshall battery plant that I visited a couple weeks ago. And they've made it pretty clear that that's moving ahead regardless of what else is going on. So we'll see. Honda is launching some EVs built in Ohio starting at the end of this year, starting with the Acura RSX and then adding the Honda Zero SUV and Saloon next year. But they were also planning to do a three-row SUV. That was supposed to launch in 2027. That, according to Nikkei, has been canceled, or, you know, they've halted development. And they've reduced their EV spending plans through the remainder of the decade. And then Lamborghini is considering delaying its first EV, which was supposed to be based on the Lanzador concept from 2023. So that might not happen before the end of the decade. We already talked about Nissan. And then Rivian.
Actually, a note on that Nissan. Yeah. In this story, it actually says, according to an internal memo, the delay is 10 months.
I wonder how many of these delays are like, well, we got 3.5 years. Let's just hold off for three. You know, let's just slow everything down.
But it does make
you
wonder, like at some point the government can't fund it, right? At some point you just have to have cars be cars. And if it's not enough, like at some point, I'm not saying today, dramatic with the getting rid of the incentives, but at some point they have to be building what people want and can afford to buy without the government having to prop them up, which is kind of what happens with those. That's what the incentives sort of do.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's why Ford is pushing ahead with theirs, because what they're doing is based on this lower cost EV architecture,
which makes a lot of sense. That makes more sense to me than introducing really big 3-row EVs that are too expensive. They were expensive with the incentives. Now they're really expensive, you know.
And, you know, they're copying a lot of the stuff that the Chinese OEMs are doing to take cost out of these vehicles. So that's why I think that project is going to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've already made it clear that, you know, the battery plant, the Marshall battery plant, is moving forward. And in fact, from the budget bill, the way that ended up playing out, they're still going to get their incentives for manufacturing for that plant. So that is going to move forward. So they're not losing everything that they put into that one. So
that's good.
We'll see what happens there.
It'll be interesting to see.
On Thursday, I was on a call with John Roth, who is the vice president of Cadillac, and he said some interesting things. First of all, he was very bullish still on EVs. You know, he talked about the fact that through the first half of this year, Cadillac's EVs accounted for 27% of Cadillac sales in the U.S., which is pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's like, if you're not already at, like, you know, GM, Cadillac or Hyundai levels, it's hard to like keep moving forward right now.
Yeah.
Because you don't have everything all set. You don't have things, you know, you don't have all the tooling done. You don't have all the, you know, so, you know, some of these automakers are sort of giving up some, mind share to GM and to Hyundai, the Hyundai Motor Group, while this sort of plays out. Meanwhile, you can get like a Ioniq 9 for like $250 a month or something crazy on the lease. Cause, you know, Hyundai loves a great lease program, a great lease deal. So, you know, when you're Ford and you're like, we haven't even started, and starting on something big and expensive doesn't seem ideal.
Something else interesting that Roth said during that conference call was Cadillac really is really targeting a lot of global growth. They want to move more aggressively back into Europe and other markets as well. And in order for Cadillac to be competitive outside of the U.S., they absolutely do need to have a strong lineup of EVs. They're, you know, that's going to be something that they need. But in order for those to be cost effective at Cadillac's volumes, you know, which are about 250,000 units a year, what they need to have the economies of scale of the rest of GM. So if Cadillac is really serious about expanding their markets outside of the U.S. and having EVs to do that, then they're going to need the rest of GM to come along for the ride. So that kind of implies that the GM is remaining fairly committed. They have delayed some stuff, and they've cut back on some things, like they sold off their stake in one of the three joint venture battery plants that they had with LG, the one in Lansing, Michigan. They sold that to LG, but they also, you know, they have two others with LG, another one with Samsung, and they still insist they're going to be launching a new Chevy Bolt this fall with LFP batteries. And we still don't know where those batteries are coming from. They may be coming from one of those other three plants. We don't know, but it's going to be interesting to see. And I was talking with someone the other day, and it sounds like GM might be shifting some of their plans for the Orion, Michigan assembly plant. So Orion was originally, that was where they built the Bolt before, and they were going to retool that to build electric pickups and SUVs. They dropped that plan, and then a few weeks ago, they announced a $4 billion to invest in factories here in the U.S., including Orion. And at the time, they said that Orion was going to add production of full-size pickup trucks and SUVs. And it looked like, you know, the full-size pickup production was going to be shifting from Mexico to Orion. And then the SUVs, they were going to add more capacity to augment what they're building in Arlington, Texas. Well, apparently GM is rethinking the plan for Orion. Perhaps what they're going to do there is shift some of the EV production that they currently do in Ramos in Mexico to the Orion plant instead. So we'll probably hear more news on that this week, but that could be interesting to watch. I think GM is still, they're still putting a lot of effort into EVs, even though they are also bringing hybrids back into their lineup in the next couple of years and other stuff.
You know what? They should bring back the Volt. My brother, who owns a Volt, is still like, he's like, he doesn't understand how somebody, a company that had technology that's now just being caught up by everyone else, range, like EV range. He's like, I'm like, GM gonna GM, man.
It's very weird, isn't it? It is strange when you think about it. They were like so early. Oh, no, wait, we're kicking that guy to the curb. Bye.
So I think that, we covered everything on the rundown. So we did have one listener email that came in that I have not put into the rundown.
I'm all lies.
This one comes from Andy in Melbourne, Australia. And says, g'day team. As someone who does not live in the U.S., lives in Australia, and is not in the motoring game, he's a veterinary surgeon. Can I ask a couple of random questions? What's a Monroney?
The Monroney, every other human on the planet calls the sticker, like when you go to buy a car, the window sticker that you have in the car that says like every detail about what's on the car and the year, make and model and the cost of it and any extra cost. And in the U.S., I don't know if it's different where he is, but in the U.S. it has ours is EPA, but it has fuel economy ratings and it has stuff about safety ratings and it had stuff about like how much your car is built in the U.S. versus how much is Canadian versus how, and where it's built in the U.S. So it's all the like nuts and bolts details about your car. And sometimes it'll have stuff like horsepower on there. Sometimes it doesn't, but it's mostly just like, it's almost like think of a list of all the things. This is standard on your car, inside, outside, safety. These are the extra things that are on your car. This is what everything costs. So it breaks down every last thing that your car has and then how much it costs. And it's on every U.S. car. It's the window sticker. Normally, as journalists, we get that in what they call a Monroney, which is just a piece of paper that has that. That's normally generally folded up and in the glove box. They have a bunch of copies and you can take one so that you have the details on your car when you go to write the review or you go to talk about it on a podcast. Mine lately have been coming if they come laminated so that I have to make a copy of it if I want a copy. They're just stuck in the top of the, yeah.
I get them through the fleet companies have websites and they just put a PDF on there so I could just download it on there.
Your fleet company does.
Yeah. Yes. The fleet company that is not the fleet companies that are outside of New England.
Yes.
In Andy's email, he spells Monroney Munroney. So he's very close. It's actually Mon. The second part of his question was, who was Monroney?
Oh, I look looked that up and, once. And do you remember, Sam?
Yeah, I do. And I looked it up again just to be sure. But I will include a link to the Wikipedia page for the Monroney sticker. The Monroney sticker was the result of legislation that was passed in 1958 by Senator. It was sponsored by Senator Mike Monroney, a Democrat from Oklahoma. That law has been in effect ever since then, since 1958. And that is where you get the requirements for the things that have to be on what is now commonly, or what is not so commonly, what is known, at least in the industry, as the Monroney sticker. Most people just call it, as you said, Nicole, the window sticker.
Window sticker.
So yep. Things like all the pricing information, destination charges, since it was originally conceived, they added things like fuel economy numbers, the CO2 ratings for these things, estimated annual fuel costs, also some of the parts content. Where was the vehicle assembled? Where's the majority of the parts come from? So I'm looking at the Stelvio Monroney right now. It says for vehicles in this car line, U.S. Canadian parts content, 0%. Major sources of foreign parts content, Italy, 55%. France, 13%. And then final assembly in Cassino, Italy. Country of origin for the engine, Italy. And then Germany for the transmission.
My Acura is 60%. U.S. and Canadian parts content, and it was made in East Liberty, Ohio.
And the engine was probably built in Anna, Ohio. Mm-hmm. So that Acura RDX probably has higher U.S. content than a typical Ford F1.
Yep, probably could.
Yeah. So that is the history of the Monroney sticker. Let me see. Was there something else that Andy had in here? Is there a story there? Yes, we just told you the story.
We told you the story. So now you know.
That's the Monroney sticker. So when you hear us talking about Monroney, it's just the window sticker that has all the assorted information on there.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and we will be back next time. Bye,
everyone.
Bye.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand, through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.